The technicians had to worm their way through the crowd to get to their consoles. Packed in behind the last row of the consoles, the university notables and news executives stood shoulder to shoulder, making the chamber hot, sweaty with the press of their bodies. Their murmured conversations sounded like the drone of insects on a summer day from Urbain's childhood in Quebec. He felt as edgy as a twitching rabbit, especially with Wexler standing beside him and some three dozen other guests squeezed into the control center. Even the redoubtable Pancho Lane, the newly retired industrialist, had flown out to Saturn for this momentous event. The only lights in the circular chamber came from the screens on the control staff's consoles. Urbain looked up at their flickering reflections on the dark, blank wall screen to see Professor Wilmot smiling expectantly beside him. "The first data from your surface probe," said Wexler, beaming at him. "This is a memorable Christmas for science, Edouard." Urbain nodded tightly. He was a short, wiry man, the kind who never worried about his weight because everything he ate turned into nervous energy. His dark hair was slicked straight back from his high forehead. His beard was neatly trimmed. As he had yesterday, he wore his best suit for this moment. After all, half the people crammed into the control center were from the news media. The high and mighty of the International Consortium of Universities had not always smiled upon Edouard Urbain. When this expedition to Saturn had started nearly 3 years earlier, Urbain was regarded as a second-rater, a competent worker but no blazing star. He was chosen to head the scientific staff that rode the immense Habitat Goddard out to Saturn to take up a polar orbit about the ringed planet, because Urbain and his team were regarded merely as caretakers, meant only to make routine observations and babysit the scientific equipment during Goddard's slow 2-year voyage out to Saturn. Once the habitat was safely in orbit there, the world's top planetary scientists would dash out on a fusion torch ship to take up the tasks of investigating Saturn and, more important, its giant moon, Titan. As far as Urbain was concerned, however, the 10,000 men and women who made up Goddard's self-contained community existed solely to service the handful of scientists and engineers under his authority. Urbain spent almost every waking moment of those 2 years driving his engineering staff to build Titan Alpha, his dream, the offspring of his mind, the product of his lifelong hope. Part spacecraft, part armored tractor, Titan Alpha was meant to carry the most sophisticated sensors and computers conceivable to the surface of Titan and use them to explore that frigid, smog-shrouded world under real-time control from scientists in Goddard. Even as he built the massive exploratory vehicle, Urbain knew in his heart that other, more prominent scientists would be the ones to use it, to guide it across Titan's fields of ice, to gain glory and recognition out of his sweat and toil. An accident changed all that. One of those accidents that dot the history of scientific research. Nadia Wunderly, one of Urbain's lowly assistants, and a stubborn woman at best, insisted on studying Saturn's rings. The rest of his scientific team were focused exclusively on Titan, for that massive moon was known to bear life. Microscopic organisms that lived in the petrochemical soup that covered part of Titan's icy surface. Wunderly discovered what might have been a new form of living organism dwelling in Saturn's rings. As her director, Urbain received much of the credit for this revelation, and perversely won the right to direct Titan Alpha in its exploration of the giant moon's surface. Now he basked in the attention of the solar system's most important scientists as his creation, his offspring, his dream come true, Titan Alpha, began to send data from its sensors on the frozen surface of Titan. Urbain held his breath. The jam-packed control center went eerily silent. The wall screen lit up to show systems activation.
Deep inside Titan Alpha's armored hide, its central computer began to receive commands through its downlink antenna. Command, systems activation. Communications downlink confirmed. Code accepted. Systems activation procedures initiated. Main power on. Auxiliary power standing by. Central computer self-checking. Self-check completed. Central computer functional. Command, Check structural integrity. Initiating structural integrity check. Outer shell intact. Structural members intact. No deformities beyond allowable limits. Interior compartments intact and pressurized. Command. Test propulsion system. Propulsion system test initiated. Reactor within nominal limits. Main engine within nominal limits. Drive wheels functional, but not engaged. Plates 414 through 422 of left forward tread, slightly deformed, but within operational limits. Command. Retract descent parachute shroud. Descent parachute shroud retracted. Command. Retract descent retro rocket pod. Descent retro rocket pod retracted. Command. Activate sensors. Sensors activated. Command. Uplink sensor data.
Uplink sensor data. Except for those bright yellow block letters, the main wall screen in the command center remained blank. Several seconds ticked by. Urbane felt perspiration break out on his brow. Wexler, the ICU president, stirred uneasily. Muttering broke out in the crowd behind Urbane's back. He even heard a hurtful snicker. A full minute passed. "We should be receiving data," Urbane said in a deathly whisper. Wexler said nothing. "Is it working?" a woman asked loudly. Pancho Lane, Urbane realized. "Data uplink aborted." Urbane stared at the words hard and bright on the dark blue background of the wall screen. "My death sentence," he said to himself. "It would have been kinder to take a pistol and shoot me through the head."
25 December, 2095. Christmas dinner. "You mean nothing came through?" Chris Cardenas asked. "Not a damn thing," said Pancho. "The probe went silent as soon as they ordered the data uplink." This Christmas dinner in the Habitat's quiet little bistro restaurant had been intended as a reunion. Pancho hadn't seen Cardenas in nearly 5 years. Holly had brought her friend, a silent, morose-looking young man named Raul Tavalera. With his long, horsey face and mistrustful brown eyes, he reminded Pancho of Eeyore from the old Winnie the Pooh vids. Tavalera said very little. He just sat beside Holly looking sad, sullen, worried. "It's Christmas," Pancho scolded him silently. "Lighten up, for crap's sake." But Holly seemed quite happy with the lug. No accounting for taste, Pancho thought. Maybe he's good in bed. Wanamaker sat beside Pancho, while Cardenas had brought a hunky guy wearing faded jeans and a mesh shirt that showed off his pecs nicely. She introduced him as Manuel Gaeta. "The stunt guy?" Pancho had asked, recognizing his rugged, slightly beat-up face. "Retired stunt guy," Gaeta had replied with an easy smile. "You flew through the rings of Saturn," said Wanamaker in his deep, gravelly voice, "without a spacecraft." "I was wearing a suit, a pretty special suit." "The ice creatures that live in the rings almost killed Manny," Cardenas said. "At one point, he was totally encased in ice." "So you're the one who really discovered the ice bugs," Pancho said, reaching for her wine. "How come they gave the credit to that woman?" "She's a scientist," Gaeta replied easily. "I'm just a stunt stud." The three couples were sitting at one of the bistro's outdoor tables on the grass. The restaurant's special holiday menu featured faux turkey, faux goose, and faux ham, all derived from the genetically modified protein that the biolab produced. The vegetables, sauces, and desserts were fresh from the Habitat's farms, however. As they relaxed over a bottle of local Chablis, Pancho leaned back in her yielding plastic chair and admired the view. "Everything's so damn clean and tidy. The grass is manicured, and the trees probably drop their leaves in neat little piles so you can vacuum them up. 1, 2, 3. And instead of sky overhead, there's more land. Clean little whitewashed villages and roads in between them." She could see the lights marking the paths like stars as the big solar windows shut down for the night. "You can have an outdoor restaurant here without ever worrying about rain," she said to herself. "They don't even use sprinklers for the grass. Underground drip hoses instead." Wanamaker.